Welcome, everyone, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne. I'm so happy you all are here. Let's take a few moments to come together to that quiet, still place that we all share. That place is always there, no matter how buried it may seem. All we need is that tiny bit of willingness to go there. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that the Holy Spirit gives. And we place the Holy Spirit in charge by our request. So with the love in your heart and the light in your mind, coming together to our perception of this time and right. So picking up where we left off last week, in the Sparkle Edition, we're in Chapter 9. It's page 228. The subheading is called The Denial of God. It's the same subheadings for all of the editions. So again, Sparkle Edition, page 228. Original Edition, it is Chapter 9, Part 11, also called The Denial of God. It's page 191 in the print version of the book. And last but not least, the Foundation for Inner Peace edition is Chapter 10. It's page 189. It's Part 5, The Denial of God. Again, that's page 189 in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. All righty, here we go. The Denial of God. The rituals of the God of Sickness are strange and very demanding. Joy is never permitted, for depression is the sign of allegiance to him. Depression means that you have forsworn God. Men are afraid of blasphemy, but they do not know what it means. They do not realize that to deny God is to deny their own identity, and in this sense, the wages of sin is death. The sense is very literal. Denial of life perceives its opposite, as all forms of denial replace what is with what is not. No one can really do this, but that you can think you can and believe you have is beyond dispute. So I'm going to pause there and we can reflect for a moment. Excuse me. So this is pretty powerful. It's saying that when we deny God, we're denying our own identity. And where it says, in this sense, the wages of sin is death, that's essentially, all that means is that that's our decision to deny what we are and instead believe that we're these bodies that are subject to not living forever. So as we deny life, we're simply perceiving its opposite. And as we are learning, we're learning how to again perceive what we have forgotten. And if we, it says this coming up somewhere in the reading, that if we chose this, if we chose to deny our truth at one point, think of just like the magnitude of that decision that had to happen in order for all of this to seem so damn real, right? And so if this seems so real, that was our choice to forget our truth. We have that same power of God still in our minds, and we will choose again to know what we really are. We will again remember what we've chosen to forget. And I really like the last sentence, how it says that the second to last, where it says, all forms of denial replace what is with what is not. No one can really do this, but that you think you can and believe you have is beyond dispute. So that's, again, this idea that we haven't actually separated from God. We haven't actually done anything, but we sure as hell think we did and believe we have because, again, every moment of the day we think we're these bodies.
And this is really done on an unconscious level, in a sense, if you don't have material like this to inform you.
Mm-hmm. Right. So which unconscious level are you saying, what's done on the unconscious level, the choice again for God or the choice that we've forgotten?
The choice that we've forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, until I came across this material, I had no idea what I was doing. All I knew is it wasn't working.
Right, right. Yep, that's what usually brings it to us. That's why it usually flies off the shelf and hits us in the head, because we've been willing to look for another way.
What's wrong with this picture?
Any other comments or thoughts or any sentences that stand out to anybody? Let's read the next paragraph. Do not forget, however, that to deny God will inevitably result in projection, and you will believe that others and not yourself have done this to you. You will receive the message you give because it is the message you want. You may believe that you judge your brothers by the messages they give you, but you have judged them by the message you give to them. Do not attribute your denial of joy to them, or you cannot see the spark in them that could bring joy to you. It is the denial of the spark that brings depression, and whenever you see your brothers without it, you are denying God.
Wow, that's,
mm-hmm.
Boy, that's really taking on a lot of responsibility.
We get no slack as course students.
No slack
it's whatsoever. 100% responsibility in bringing it back to us. And I really resonate with this paragraph because I actually wrote a blog post once about being in a social setting with a group of people that often I feel self-conscious around. I'm not totally comfortable. I feel like I'm being judged. And it was this huge sort of moment, this aha moment that I had when I had that willingness to see that I was the one doing the judging first. I was the one going in already making decisions as to, you know, how it was going to be, what they, you know, might be thinking, when in fact, you know, that judgment first came from me. And to go, you know, on a deep level, what am I judging? But I'm judging that they're separate from me. I'm judging that I'm a body and that they're a body. And in holding them to their bodies, of course, I have to then hold myself to mine.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
And it's I was true. Kind of thinking the same thing as you were reading the paragraph of just thinking of times where I've gone into social situations and thought, you know, these people aren't spiritual, they're muggles, what am I going to talk to them about? And, you know, I have all these preconceived ideas of people, which is... Well, there you go.
I can see, I actually think, Tony, that may have been your line. I have like a little... Do you think you could press *6 or go to a place maybe, I don't know if you're on a cell phone. Oh, thank you so much, Tony. I think that did it. Please do come off, though, if you have things to share. We want to hear from you. I have a little window where I can see sometimes where, you know, the noise is coming from. Anyway, sorry about that. Paul, could you keep sharing what you were sharing?
That was pretty much it. I think that was a good punctuation mark for it. But pretty much, I mean, it's what you were saying, but I've seen myself go into situations where, you know, people who aren't on a spiritual path, or I have these assumptions that, you know, everybody's going to be like that, or, you know, even that's something, you know, it's just all ego. And this is reminding me of that.
Right. It is all ego. I love how it says, do not attribute, it's so clear, do not attribute your denial of joy to them. Meaning, how many times are we in situations when it's like, oh, that person is causing me to feel whatever, fill in the blank. It's saying, do not attribute your denial of joy to them, or you cannot see the spark in them that could bring joy to you. It's the denial of the spark that brings depression. And whenever you see your brothers without it, you are denying God. So it's our task to be willing to see that spark of light in others. And again, we can't do that by ourselves. That's where, you know, the whole, I love the saying to choose love, but if we're choosing love of our small self alone, then we're going to fall short. We're going to fall flat because we're not, our task is to choose for the Holy Spirit and allow the Holy Spirit to choose for love for us.
Mm.
And then that's when we see that spark in other people. It has to come out.
This is Yogi, and just wanted to put it out there in the open for what people's definition of the Course is of God.
The Course defines it as love. You know, I don't know if anybody else has any other things to add, but it's there's actually a lesson that it's escaping me. There's a number of them. God being love is also happiness, so you could use the word happiness. There's a lot of different descriptors.
There is no love but God's.
Yeah, there is no love but God's. What was that, Paul?
That describes it better than anything, I think.
I agree. And Paul, what were you going to add?
I was just going to say, I think that's in the definition of terms also.
In the clarification of terms?
Thank you, yeah.
I think it's awesome. Thank you for mentioning that. So in the very, very, very back of the book, at least in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, I am wondering, in the Sparkle edition, I think it's in the front. But in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition and the original edition, in the clarification of terms, which is in the very, very back.
Yeah, it really hits me when it says, do not forget, however, that to deny love will inevitably result in projection. And this whole paragraph here, do not attribute your denial of love to them. That would make sense. That seems to resonate more with me, yeah.
Your denial of God.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yes, you can just substitute if you see, you know, if that word God doesn't resonate with you, if you substitute the word love instead, that can be helpful.
Yeah, thank you. Thank all of you.
Yes. Thank you. Great question.
That seems to be the answer anytime I start to get confused when I'm reading, especially the text, if it becomes a little too abstract. If I just substitute words with the word love, it always just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does. Let's read the next paragraph. And now I want to read love instead of God. Allegiance to the denial of love is the ego's religion. So again, allegiance to the denial of God is the ego's religion. The God of sickness obviously demands the denial of health because health is in direct opposition to its own survival. But consider what this means to you. Unless you are sick, you cannot keep the gods you made, for only in sickness could you possibly want them. Blasphemy, then, is self-destructive, not God-destructive. It means that you are willing not to know yourself in order to be sick. This is the offering which your gods demand because, having made him out of your insanity, he is an insane idea. He has many forms, but although he may seem like many different things, he is but one idea, the denial of God. So the God of sickness is the denial of love.
Yeah, this is Yogi again. Yeah, it's been a profound week since we read what we read last week.
Mm-hmm.
And just looking at sickness and how holding on to sickness or illness or disease or anything, how it creates conflict and makes it so much easier for me to want to attack myself and others. And before I came on the line, because I've actually had like a whole day retreat in the Course of Miracles today.
Oh, wow.
And before I came on the phone, the Holy Spirit just showed me, I just laid down just to get a little bit of a break before I came on the line. And what the Holy Spirit showed me was, your allegiance to sickness will always cause you to attack. And as long as there's attack, you can't possibly receive my love. And that you can't get well. And that the Holy Spirit was also, I read a portion where it was about the use of the body, how to ask, so I began to ask the Holy Spirit to show me how to use the body, how to unite the body and use it for communication for the rest of this lifetime. So when I lay it down at the end of this lifetime, I can look back from some other plane or existence and say, yeah, I really did use my flesh. I really did use my body or the expression of who I was to unite and communicate. So, yeah, this is a very powerful, it's all these three paragraphs are powerful, but this is really powerful. So
yeah.
It made me realize, okay, I want to give the Holy Spirit my body so that it can become holy and serve the sonship, serve others.
That's so,
you know,
beautiful.
There, I have been, you know, I go to the gynecologist every year, and now they make such an issue out of, they call their, it's actual harassment, you know, if you don't go for your mammography and all. And I, sometimes I lose sight of why I should or why I shouldn't do that. Instinctively, you know, I don't believe in it. And I wound up going because I had to at one point, because I had an issue that needed to be addressed. But this paragraph is like the answer to this whole confusion I've had around this issue. This is really amazing, Corinne.
It's good stuff, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
What I've learned, too, because, you know, I've shared before about my, you know, one of my, I would say probably my biggest ego hook in this lifetime has been surrounding, you know, fears of sickness and things, you know, could things be wrong with my body and that sort of thing. And I've come to feel that, you know, and I've shared this before, that it's not about not running to the doctor or, you know, resisting of your own will, you know, an urge that you have to go, like, get something checked out. Because, again, if I'm doing that by myself, I'm doing it by myself. It's not
right.
through the Holy Spirit. So going and doing, you know, whatever it is that you feel you need to do with the Holy Spirit, and then when it comes through you that it feel you feel prompted to not, you know, maybe do something the next time around and, you know, give it truly to the Holy Spirit instead, then it's coming from a different place. You know, it's not coming from our small self. Then we can, you know, be more certain about the guidance that's there. And Yogi, I just also wanted to reflect on what you said. Thank you so much for sharing. That was really, really powerful. And it reminded me of a line in the Course that talks about how, you know, this life, our only purpose, you know, here is to, like you just said, have the body be used as a means of communication. And as we turn to the Holy Spirit, our life becomes, and the Course quote is, a meaningful encounter with the truth. And that's all I want in this lifetime, is to have that meaningful encounter with the truth. And, you know, I don't need to accomplish anything anymore for my small will. I'm serious about wanting to wake up. So, and I also wanted to say, sorry, I thought of one other thing. I thought it was so beautiful too to hear you say that you were just, you know, you had a question or an issue or whatever, and that you went directly to the Holy Spirit. That's what this is all about. If we have a question about the Course, and actually, I'm thinking back to our conversation last week when you asked, you know, what's going to happen as we heal, like will we see, you know, the polar bears, you know, things get better. That is even, I was reflecting on that question throughout the week, and what was coming to me was that, you know, that's really a question to bring to the Holy Spirit, because all I know at this point in time is that the Course says, you know, that the body's eyes will always report separation to us, and that we're learning to see with a different vision. We're learning to see with a different set of eyes, and that in order to fully get the Course, the insignificance of the body, this is a Course quote, has to become an acceptable idea. So we have to be willing to learn that the body is insignificant. And if we're learning that the body is if our own body is insignificant, guess what? We're learning that all bodies and all seeming separation is actually, you know, what our body's eyes see is insignificant. So I don't know, you know, who knows exactly what it might, whether or not we'll see something different with the body's eyes, but I thought that that was just a great question, you know, to bring to the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, I wanted to just say something else about the body, though, because this is something I've struggled with the Course in Miracles, that always makes me not come back. And it was really Eckhart Tolle, and going to his retreats and working with him, and the Course played a huge role in his awakening, but he doesn't really, a lot of people don't know this, just like it did for Byron Katie, for Esther Abraham teachings, it's all from the Course. All of what they say is from the Course in Miracles. But he said that it's not the body that the Course is so much talking about, it's the pain body. But if we go into the inner body, the essence that's really timeless, we can heal anything. We can. So I love my body. I love the expression. I love the magnificence. Having spent years as a healer, body worker, and getting a lot of body work done now and whatever, I'm always stunned at how things work in the human body and realize no human being could have given me this. No one could have given me the cells, how the cells function, how they communicate. No one could have, you know, I went to get Rolfed on again this week and, you know, she moved my jaw around and told me that the jaw was out because of my hip bone or this, or, and then everything just always comes back and I'm always stunned. I mean, I always give... You know, she's a Course in Miracles healer, and that's why I can work with her, and I am too. But I'm always stunned at the miracle that of the Holy Spirit to and the body that I have, that all that we have, and what the body does. But what the Holy Spirit said is because we've attacked the body for so many lifetimes, or in one lifetime, it doesn't function for its purpose. It has a function. And so I always think of the body as having a purpose. But it's a purpose that's designed by the Holy Spirit, not by the ego.
And that's where it's our choice as to which purpose we're going to give the body. That the body, the Course is very clear that the body is a wholly neutral thing. That we put everything onto the body. It's wholly neutral. And so, is the purpose going to be one of awakening, where we give the purpose of the body, you know, our perceived body, to the Holy Spirit, or is it going to be, you know, that we're listening to the separate self, ego? But yeah, but the Course does, you know, it is pretty clear at the same time about how the body is part of the dream, that we're dreaming right now. So I don't know Eckhart Tolle's, I'm not really familiar with his definitions of his terminology, but to me, hearing pain body, I think about how the Course talks about our split mind, essentially, and it's that split off part of our unconscious mind that is choosing for the pain, that's choosing for, you know, the ego.
And he does say that, and he said that, but we cannot awaken without a body, that no one comes here without a body,
mm-hmm,
and we cannot
mm-hmm.
attain enlightenment without the body, that no one has ever attained enlightenment without the body. So he was referring to the body that we give to Christ, that we
mm-hmm.
that we give to the Holy Spirit. We need mm-hmm. the body. At least I feel like I need my body to wake up, because
mm-hmm.
my hands, my feet, my toenails, my eyelash, my lip, my tongue, those are all part of God, you know, in the dream.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you. Beautiful. Anybody else have anything to add or share or respond or questions or comments, insights? Okay, next paragraph. Sickness and death entered the mind of God's Son against his will. The attack on God made his Son think he was fatherless, and out of his depression, he made the God of depression. This was his alternative to joy, because he would not accept the fact that although he was a creator, he had been created. Yet the Son is helpless without the Father, who alone is his help. We said before that of yourselves you can do nothing, but you are not of yourselves. If you were, what you have made would be true, and you could never escape. So there's a few things that stand out to me. The first sentence, sickness and death entered the mind of God's Son against his will. All that means is God doesn't know sickness and death at all. And so that's not the will of God. And we, however, decided to believe in that. And so that's just what it means by it being, you know, against God's will. But that's because we're doing something that God doesn't know. Again, you can kind of see, I feel like I can see through that sentence. If you're thinking you're doing something against God's will, that is where, you know, guilt arises from, this unconscious guilt that we carry. I really like, too, how in the latter part of the paragraph it says that the Son is helpless without the Father, who alone is his help. We said before that of yourselves you can do nothing, but you are not of yourselves. And if we were, we would essentially be stuck in the dream, and we could never escape if we were of ourselves. But because we are not of ourselves, because something else created us, love, we do have a way out. Thank God. Any other comments or questions? Insights? You know, I'm jumping back to what we were just talking about, Yogi, with what you were saying about Eckhart Tolle's teaching, and it just, I don't know, it just popped into my head out of seemingly nowhere, but just I remember hearing Nook Sanchez say something very similar that, you know, again, giving our body to the Holy Spirit, it now serves a divine purpose. We need our bodies. Our bodies are helping us wake up.
Yeah, and thank you so much for telling me about her last week when we were dealing with the same topic. Mm-hmm. She's got a huge amount of material, and I just feel so glad to have that reference. Thank you.
Good, good. Oh, you're so welcome. She's phenomenal, doing really phenomenal teaching. Next paragraph. It is because you did not make yourselves that you need be troubled by nothing. Your gods are nothing because your Father did not create them. You cannot make creators who are unlike your Creator any more than he could have created a son who was unlike him. If creation is sharing, it cannot create what is unlike itself. It can share only what is. Depression is isolation, and so it could not have been created. Anything stand out to anyone?
The whole thing.
The whole Ditto.
Sometimes when you're reading them, because I've read the whole thing now, there's a paragraph that I haven't highlighted, and this is one I'm like, how could I ever miss and not highlighted it? It's like amazing. Just from that first line, it is because you did not make yourself that you need be troubled by nothing.
I was going to say the same thing. That first line is just like mind-blowingly good. It's just like...
Isn't it?
Because, yeah, like you have nothing to worry about because you haven't created anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like... Oh. All right. I'm good. I'm cool.
Yep. Rejoice.
You know, this whole thing with the body is kind of interesting because I had a dream the other night that was like nothing I have ever experienced before. And it was funny because I forced myself to wake up immediately because it was so vivid. It was like broad daylight. And it was my husband. And he had on this blue work shirt. And he was young. And he came into the room, but there was atmosphere. It is just as if... And immediately I jumped out of the dream. But that body... looked in that dream, and as soon as I woke up, and I wasn't afraid, and I wasn't afraid to go back to sleep. It really wasn't scary at all, but it was really dimensional. It was
wow. I got goosebumps. I'm covered in goosebumps.
It absolutely was incredible. Mm-hmm. And that's why, I mean, honestly, this body can't be mm-hmm. real.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh, Paula, thank you so much for sharing that.
If it could come through like that.
Right, right. My mind is not in my body. My body is in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was, there was daylight and air, and it was so cool.
Mm, wow.
Has anybody ever experienced that? I mean, this is because I did just one. I woke up in the morning, it was like, God, I wish I could talk to somebody about this because it's really quite unusual.
Paula, and you were, geek again, can you tell me what, I didn't hear, you sort of cut out, what was it you said that you saw, I heard the dimensional part, but what was it, what is it that stood out so much for you when you saw your husband? Was it the glow or his radiance?
No, it was as if he were right here in front of me. I mean, it was. It felt. I had a laugh when I woke up because in this dream I knew. Oh no, you're not really here. You know, no, you're. This can't be real. But it was. It felt as real as anything I have ever experienced in the waking dream.
Mm. Was your husband, was he in bed with you?
No. It was as if I was looking into a room that was was daylight. There was air. It was, and
wow.
There was a window behind him. So there was lots of light coming in.
Wow.
And
yeah.
I, when I looked at him, it was like, oh, he's so young.
And for those of you that might not know, Paula's husband passed away how many years ago?
It's about 11 years ago now.
11 years ago.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. That's apparently the young thing, like the movie, Heaven's Not Real, that's something that they touch on a tiny bit. But, yeah, that's very, what you've had there is, I've never had it happen to me. I've never. But a lot of my teachers have. It's where, first of all, in heaven, like in the movie where they say heaven's not real, nobody, the little boy sees
uh-huh.
Jesus in the movie, heaven's not real. And he says that nobody wears glasses there and everybody is young in heaven. Nobody is, we're not, when we die 80 or 90, we look old and shriveled up. In heaven, nobody is old. But, yeah, in the autobiography of a yogi, this was the sort of thing that happened where these ageless yogis, 200, 300-year-old bodies, they would be able to project themselves through walls or do stuff like that or appear bilocate or bipolar. Yeah, that's a, so I've heard this thing, Paula, where people, a loved one dies and they appear to you in this dynamic. It just means that they've reached a state of real realization. And they can appear that way that you, and also that you've reached a state of realization that you can perceive them that way because they can dematerialize. The whole thing with death is an illusion. We will all eventually get to the point where we can dematerialize and materialize the body like he did in the dream, Paula.
Yeah, it was really cool. I had a laugh. I mean, I actually had a laugh because it's like, whoa, what are you doing?
Wow.
It was really quite something.
Deidre, did you have something to add?
Yeah, the one thing that keeps coming forward for me that I feel like I'm being asked to mention for you, Paula, is dreams are a very easy way for people who have crossed over to communicate messages. And the reason for that is our ego is not dominant when we're dreaming. So our body is in that state of spiritual communication and we're not resisting anything. So you can you can trust what you receive is what I'm being given to share. So,
and you know what comes forward for me? That was a beautiful, beautiful example, a beautiful experience, Paula, of how our sleeping and waking dreams have different forms and
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That they can, it can feel so real, you know, while you're sleeping, and then, you know, you wake up and this feels real and it's actually all the same.
I think that the thing that I realized immediately as soon as I saw him is, I dream all the time. Nothing's ever really defined. Everything's kind of like abstract, and I'm moving in and out of things. But this was this was solid.
Wow.
This was really solid, and it had atmosphere and light, just as if you were in a sunny room. It was really cool.
And the other thing that I'm receiving is that your husband is always there with you in that capacity. Like, he doesn't leave. So, like, in that sense, the veil between what we believe is two worlds doesn't exist. So
you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I'm glad it's making sense, because sometimes I just give what I get, but yeah, he's definitely always with you all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really powerful. This is Jen. Hey, guys.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Hi. I had an experience recently that it happened when I was kind of in like a meditative state, and before I was falling asleep, I was thinking about my grandfather who passed in December, and I just felt like really connected to seeing him and like his joy and like his, just like he was like so happy, and I was just feeling so much love for him. And it was kind of the first time since his passing since I could really feel like that connected to him. And as soon as the memory kind of faded, I heard a huge crash. And the chandelier on my ceiling, like, was swinging back and forth, and the candle had fallen down, and it was like, I knew it was him, because it was just like, this thing doesn't move, like, my window wasn't open, like, I was just like, oh my God, I'm like, okay, Grandpa, like, well, I call him Poppy, I'm like, I'm so glad you're here. I'm like, but that freaked me out. Like, could you please, like, let me know, like, in a gentler way?
Oh, that is wonderful.
He's got a good sense of humor, doesn't he?
Oh, my God. I mean, you guys, like, this little day of his funeral, I go up to start speaking, and a huge gust of wind came by and almost, like, blew everyone's, like, umbrellas away. Like, it was like, and everyone was like, oh, my God, that's totally him. Because it was obvious that the wind just, like, kicked up like crazy and then stopped, like, as soon as I was done.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's nice to have his humor. Still, yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome. Has anybody read the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers?
Oh, I have it, but I got it on my Nook, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
That's another one that I would definitely recommend. I so enjoyed it, and it's this woman's experience. Her brother dies, and she can still talk to him after he passes, and he actually appears to her. She can see him, and he's, you know, describing what he's going through and how his growth actually continues after he left his body, and it was a really good read, and it's an easy read, so I definitely recommend that book.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Yeah, like when I never got a chance to tell my grandfather in person, like, I just always just have the thought around him, like, okay, when you go, you know, to the other side, like, contact me. Like, contact me. And I would always have that thought. And I remember when he had got sick, my grandmother was like, you can't say that to him. And I was like, you know, like, why not? And something happened where I never ended up saying it. But I realize now that he heard me, you know, like I didn't even need to say it. Like,
that's what I was going to say. Like, he feels like he had to make it really big so that you would notice. So that's what he did. That's why I laughed. He's got a really good sense of humor. Like, she asked, so I better make it as
he was a man of few words, and yet, yeah, when he said something, he meant it.
Yeah. Wow. Awesome. Thank you, Jen. That's such a powerful story. I love it. Oh, I love it. I love it. Let's read another few more paragraphs before we conclude for the night. Where are we? Okay. Son of God, you have not sinned, but you have been much mistaken. Yet this can be corrected, and God will help you, knowing that you could not sin against him. You denied him because you loved him, knowing that if you recognized your love for him, you could not deny him. Your denial of him therefore means that you love him and that you know he loves you. Remember that what you deny, you must have known. And if you accept denial, you can accept its undoing. That's the sentence that I referenced earlier, that if we could accept this big denial of love that we, you know, and therefore this world arose to sort of hide our choice, if we can accept denial and do all this, we can certainly accept its undoing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is awesome. Ah. Anything else from this paragraph stand out to anybody?
Oh, that's the best news yet.
Right.
That last line is really, that's everything.
It is. I agree. Next paragraph. Your father has not denied you. He does not retaliate, but he does call to you to return. When you think he has not answered your call, you have not answered his. He calls to you from every part of the sonship because of his love for his son. If you hear his message, he has answered you, and you will learn of him if you hear aright. The love of God is in everything he created, for his son is everywhere. Look with peace upon your brothers, and God will come rushing into your heart in gratitude for your gift to him.
I want to highlight that line, the love of God is in everything he created, for his son is everywhere. That's
beautiful.
So
beautiful. It is. It's funny, just you end up highlighting the whole book. That one paragraph that you didn't highlight, but ooh, now I'm seeing like all, you know, and that's how it happens as we go through the course. You know, we see things that we didn't see before. We get things that we didn't get before because we're removing those layers of fear. We're going deeper and deeper into, you know, the love that we forgot.
Maybe that's when we become enlightened. We've highlighted our entire book. To the last
say that
line.
Again.
I said maybe that's when we hit enlightenment, when we've highlighted our whole book.
The book
only
is glowing.
Down to the last word.
Instantaneous.
Maybe we've become enlightened and we don't need the highlighter anymore.
Right,
yeah.
That too.
Exactly.
We can just trust that we'll find that, you know, sentence that we need to find when we want it, just by asking.
Yeah.
It's so funny that you say that because I always tease my mom because she has, you know, all of these page markers. All her book is like a rainbow of those little, you know, like sticky things that stick out to mark the page. And so she actually just said recently, you know, I'm just going to start trusting that I'll find what I need to find when I want it. So
I never saw anything like it, Corinne.
You
I remember
right?
That. Oh, it
still does it.
It was unbelievable. That's great.
Trying to borrow a book from her is always an ordeal because it's really hard to read because there's tags everywhere. Yeah. But anyway, let's read the next paragraph too. Do not look to the god of sickness for healing, but only to the god of love, for healing is the acknowledgement of him. When you acknowledge him, you will know that he has never ceased to acknowledge you, and that in his acknowledgement of you lies your being. You are not sick, and you cannot die, but you can confuse yourself with things that do. Remember, though, that to do this is blasphemy, for it means that you are looking without love on God and his creation, from which he cannot be separated. Only the eternal can be loved, for love does not die. What is of God is his forever, and you are of God. Would he allow himself to suffer? And would he offer his son anything that is not acceptable to him? I have always loved that those two lines. You are not sick and you cannot die, but you can confuse yourself with things that do. That comes, actually, what comes to mind for me, and I don't think I have it handy. I was looking at John Mundy's Miracles magazine, and he had written that somebody had given him an article about, it must have been, I don't know if it was a famous actor or director or somebody, on this man's deathbed, he said to whoever the person was with him that this world is a hoax. He had this, you know, must have been having an experience of seeing beyond the veil, seeing the fact that this is all a grand illusion. So I love that this idea that this world is a big hoax. Other things that stand out to you? Insight,
when you say that, Corinne, this is really funny, but I felt that when I was traveling, because there's all these rules about security, and, you know, you're at the airport, and you take off your shoes, and you put them in this big bin, and they make you, you know, like if you have, like, tweezers in your bag, you have to take them out, and, you know, like, all these really, you know, silly things, and it's just like, this isn't real, like, this is a joke, it's all a joke, you know, like, all the things that we think are, like, so important. And I just remember looking over at this security guard, and he was having a rough morning, and he was, you know, saying to people, like, you have to take your toiletries out of your bag and put them here. You're not listening to me, and this, that, and the other. And I'm just thinking, like, you know, all this stuff that we create in the world that we think is, like, so imperative, and it's just, it doesn't mean anything. It really is like a hoax.
Yeah. That is, you just reminded me, too. This is sort of how I used to, the anxiety that came along with getting on a plane for me was ridiculous. And I'm hearing my echo. Is anybody else hearing that?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. If anybody's on speakerphone, if you could maybe take it off speakerphone or mute your line. Echo still there? Ah, it's gone. Okay, sometimes speakerphone does it. Thank you. Where was I? So I got over my fear of flying in this sort of experience of realizing that there is no up or down. There is no up there or down here. And I can't, I feel like, put it into words any better than that because it was such an experience. But just this idea that there's no up there and down here, it's all a hoax.
Yeah.
It was much easier for me to get on planes.
Wow.
Yeah, I was terrified. The first time I went up in a small plane, and I was absolutely terrified. And when we landed, the earth felt so heavy, like just stepping out of that plane. You're light as a bird when you're up there. And I love that, when I, just the contrast of that, you know, stepping off that plane and feeling the weight of the ground and the weight, and all of a sudden, my whole perception about flying changed. I love flying now.
Mm-hmm.
I was never afraid after that.
Wow.
It was a really interesting experience because I came away with, like, what I observed, what I saw, and what I felt. And it was, I had this overwhelming sense of, like, you know, how we, as human beings, we feel that we need to protect ourselves from each other. In other words, retain our separate identities. And it's just like, I just got this wave from spirit was like, there's no war to fight. There's nothing to protect yourself against. And it's that resistance that creates, you know, all the chaos that we experience. The idea that we need to, you know, fight against each other, resist each other, and you know, wage wars against each other. And it was just a really interesting little vignette of.
But everything lightens up when I mean, because that's it. That is really, resistance is the only problem we have.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really
interesting. Everything lightens up when you make that conscious decision not to do that. You know, but with the Holy Spirit, because we really, you know, the Holy Spirit is the one who takes away that resistance.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Wow. Mm. How about we'll do one more paragraph and then we'll stop there. If you will accept yourself as God created you, you will be incapable of suffering. Yet to do this, you must acknowledge Him as your creator. This is not because you will be punished otherwise. It is merely because your acknowledgement of your Father is the acknowledgement of yourself as you are. Your Father created you wholly without sin, wholly without pain, and wholly without suffering of any kind. If you deny Him, you bring sin, pain, and suffering into your own mind because of the power He gave it. Your mind is capable of creating worlds, but it can also deny what it creates because it is free. Again, I feel like I could underline the whole paragraph, highlight the whole thing. I love it. If you will accept yourself as God created you, you will be incapable of suffering.
Yeah.
And this also calls to mind for me, too, where it says, you know, to do this, you have to acknowledge God as your creator, and it's not because you'll be punished for it. It's merely because by acknowledging that God created you, you're giving, the Course talks about giving God His fatherhood back, acknowledging, again, that, you know, you were created in love, in light, in joy, without pain, without suffering. So as we, you know, recognize that again, we're recognizing who it is that we really are, just like this paragraph is saying. I heard a kitty cat.
Oh, they've had a big day today. The mobile groomer came.
Aww.
Oh, they look like angels tonight. They're really beautiful.
Aww.
You should see them.
Aww. They are
angels. I stayed with them the whole time.
What was that, DJ? Did you have
I said they are angels.
They are.
I said
they
really are.
Deidre, they sit here with me now. I used to have to lock them up because they would carry on so much. They're both here with me right now, and they haven't made a peep. They love this energy.
They do. Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to highlight the last sentence. Your mind is capable of creating worlds, but it can also deny what it creates because it is free. That just calls to mind to me how, again, it says that we had this, you know, our mind chose to dream this dream, to, you know, create this crazy world. But, and if you, you know, I think I've said it before this way, that, you know, we have the power of God in our mind, and we've used that power to forget that, you know, we are love, that we are part of God. And so if your mind is capable of creating this world, it also can deny what it creates because it's free. So we have just as much power to remember as we did that we used to forget.
Well, I have to say, before this is all said and done, Corinne, this is so helpful. And being able to tune into this on Sunday night, because by Sunday I know, I need it. I need it. I'm not missing it.
So helpful for me, too.
I can't thank you enough.
Oh, I can't thank all of you enough. We all make this what it is. So I really, really, I'm just holding the space. So I really am so grateful. Does anybody have any other comments or final insights or anything to share before we end?
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a big group hug. Thank you, everybody.
I feel it.
Have
Thank you.
A wonderful week, and we'll see
Thank
you next
you.
Week. Good night.
Love you all.
Love you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you.